Blog Talk Radio.
All right, and welcome to another episode of PWT Talks NXT. After not being here for last week, here I am. I'm back once again, and my name is Nate Lindberg, and you can follow me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I'm filling in for Kelly Wells, who's not with us here tonight, but I'm sure he will be back next week unless, you know, maybe I did something with him somewhere, maybe. I don't know. Anyway, we're here to talk about NXT, and NXT we will talk about. Here to do that with me is Tom Stoup.
Thank you, at Tom Stoup on Twitter. Did you kick Kelly in the face in the corner?
Oh yeah, repeatedly, over and over again.
Yeah, when Kelly said that he was going to rotate out this week, I was just like, he didn't see the spoilers, did he? Because I think this is one he was going to want to talk about.
Seriously, I know he's got, there was definitely a lot of stuff Kelly could have sunk his teeth in tonight, and I'm sure we'll get into all of that in a little bit, but we're going to start first with the main event. And you know what? It's crazy. They didn't put the main event on last. The main event was on in the middle of the show when Cameron Grimes and LA Knight started washing balls. Anyway, that got me so bad. I actually laughed so hard. I had sandwich up my nose. I was trying to eat dinner. And that got me. That popped me. But we'll get there. We'll get there. The actual main event for tonight was Bronson Reed versus Adam Cole, which went about 12 minutes and 6 seconds, which was not quite the longest match of the night, but it should have been. It was almost the longest match of the night. Adam Cole did go over Bronson Reed in what was a pretty good match. It was a good showing for both of them, I thought. Basically, story of the match with Adam Cole being the smaller underdog, if you will, trying to take Reed down, chopping his knees down and trying to keep the big man off of his base. But Adam Cole did finally overcome and get the win towards the end there. And after the match, Kyle O'Reilly ran down the entrance ramp after Adam Cole was celebrating on the ramp and attacked him with the steel chair, then took the steel steps apart and delivered a suplex on the bottom half of the steel steps to end the show. So, Tom, what did you think of the show-closing angle tonight?
So I'm starting to wonder if I'm somehow biased against Bronson Reed matches, because so often I feel like he just doesn't look good out there. And in this case, it seemed like he was just sent out there to die. You know, so much of the match was him selling exhaustion or perhaps just being exhausted and working from underneath, as Cole seems to really dominate a lot of it. And perhaps even more importantly, that's what the crowd wants, and they know that's what the crowd wants. And it was just Bronson's lot in life tonight to go out there and not have the crowd cheer for his babyface act as the heel beat him up. It was kind of funny. This reminded me, I don't know, it's really neither here nor there, but it reminded me of when Kyle was first breaking away from Undisputed Era. And he wrestled, I want to say it was Oney Lorcan in a main event. It might have been somebody else, but it seemed like a relatively insignificant match. And for somebody featuring somebody, Kyle, who was still finding themselves, and there was no angle, which is fine. But in a main event match on network TV, I was a little critical of the decision to go on last with that. With this one, Cole is the biggest star on the brand, so you can absolutely do that. So just as I'm starting to type that down, they run a post-match angle. And I'm like, oh, you could have used that a couple months ago. But you know what? It's fine, because they've got to get this feud over with. They've got to move on to the third chapter. Moves us in that direction. So yeah, and I guess Kyle did the same thing to Adam as Adam did to him, that he was all upset about being reminded about last week.
No, exactly. So I think you pretty much hit the nail on the head there with Reed. Anyway, that's pretty much how I felt going into this too. Coming out of it rather, was Reed just kind of went in there to die? He didn't seem like he was. I don't know. Like I've kind of felt like he's been on a better trajectory than this as of late. And you know, whatever. Adam Cole being the biggest guy on the brand, being the biggest name on the brand, rather. I mean, I guess in a way it kind of makes sense for him to go over and kind of hype up the match with him and Adam Cole, with him and Kyle O'Reilly, rather. But yeah, in a way, I don't know. I feel like this didn't really do any favors for Bronson Reed either. So, but yeah, we'll obviously see what happens down the line a little bit here. So we'll head over to the phone lines here and we'll let you guys talk about NXT and see what we have to say. So we'll head over and we'll talk with Darrell. Darrell, what's going on tonight, man? What you think of the show? Do we have Darrell? Okay, I don't think we have Darrell. I'm going to put Darrell back on mute here, and we will come back to him in a little bit. In that case, why don't we go ahead and we'll talk about – oh, that kind of screwed me up here. Now I got to find something else to talk about. Why don't we go ahead and
talk about Cameron Grimes?
You know what? Why not? Let's go back. We'll talk about Cameron Grimes and LA Knight. So at the beginning, there were three different segments of Cameron Grimes and LA Knight here tonight, all of which took place at the golf course with Cameron Grimes playing the caddy for LA Knight. LA Knight, clearly not a great golfer, couldn't seem to really hit a shot to save his life here. And Cameron Grimes kind of picked up on that and ended up betting him that he wouldn't be able to make some shots here and there, and ended up $10,000 that LA Knight wound up owing him by the time the second segment rolled around. The first segment had him diving into a water hazard after a ball that LA Knight shot into said water hazard and ordered him to go get. That was the second one, and that was also the one where Ted DiBiase showed up and kind of gave him a bit of a pep talk and told him that he's better than this. He should be a champion, not in a water hazard looking for somebody else's ball. And then we had the third one where grizzled young vets were playing behind them and kind of a bit upset that it was taking Cameron Grimes and LA Knight so long to play through. They said they basically bet them whoever could sink the ball next, double or nothing, double the money that Cameron Grimes was owed by LA Knight. And Cameron Grimes wound up sinking that ball hole in one. And while he did that, ended up hitting two more balls, the two dangly things between LA Knight's legs, and then whacked it, that was on the backswing, and then hit him in the forehead on the follow-through. As LA Knight was lying on the ground unconscious, he threw the club at Grizzled Young Vets, a la Eddie Guerrero in his chair, and blamed everything on Grizzled Young Vet, the Grizzled Young Vets, and basically told LA Knight that it was them and ordered LA Knight to go chase them away. And LA Knight did that as Grizzled Young Vets were leaving the golf course on their what are they called? The golf cart. That's what they're called, the golf cart. This whole thing was amazing. It was amazingly stupid. Amazingly stupid. It was horrendously stupid, but so hilarious at the same time. It's all in the delivery and the performance, and it's over the top. It's bad acting, but man, it works. It absolutely works. The addition of Ted DiBiase coming back tonight, I thought was fantastic, kind of giving a little bit of a pep talk to Cameron Grimes, which I thought was going to end up maybe leading to another, basically him kind of turning on LA Knight, but it almost looks like he's now trying to defend LA Knight maybe a little bit more, and then they'll actually turn into a tag team, take on maybe Grizzly Young Vets or something like that. Tom, what do you think?
Yeah, I thought the DiBiase appearance was going to turn into like a vision or something like that. I don't think I would put it past the show to do that. But, you know, that's the realm that we're talking in. It is that stupid. And I was and when I say the way segments are stupid, it's stupid in a very different way. These were stupid in a way that I was just glad that Cameron Grimes is as entertaining as he is, because I was ready for another month of those when they did the Butler thing. I was like, okay, I've just got to knuckle down and wait until we get to Takeover or something, because this is going to be bad. And it's amazing that it's not. It's one of the best things on the show. It's consistent in quality and it's consistent in storytelling. You still got like Cameron Grimes waiting in there and he's like, well, you know, I got myself into something. He's still just sort of merrily accepting his lot. He knows that he lost the match, so he's got to, you know, do this with a smile on his face or however he feels about it. There's almost a weird sense of honor to it in that regard. And my God, just it's, you and I were talking about it offline. It's all in the delivery. If Jeremy Borash says, hey, we're going to do a playing with yourself joke, a visual gag that is then going to turn into wordplay where you're talking about golf balls, but of course we think you're talking about a different kind of balls. It's just like, how deep have we sunk here? But Cameron Grimes' delivery, his loudly oblivious delivery, like not only is he oblivious to the entendre, but he's oblivious to how loudly he's saying it, how and how it might embarrass not just himself. Well, it wouldn't embarrass him. He wouldn't get embarrassed by it. But, you know, how much it would embarrass Knight to to be heard with his caddy shouting, yeah, how long you want me to wash your balls for? And almost almost murdering Nate Lindberg.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's just done so well. And on top of it, as just a cherry on top, they set up a tag match for next week. I'm sure it'll be next week. It just like, you know, no, these aren't just dumb video packages that prolong the story, because there wasn't really, I mean, I guess you had the DiBiase appearance, but there wasn't too much story development going on here, but they set up the match. So yeah, I mean, the kind of thing that I expected to just be tearing apart week after week. And it's one of the best things on the show.
No, absolutely. It's the one thing that I look forward to the most on the show. Anytime it comes up on the screen, it's just like I ended up having to pausing the show, and then I was filling in for Kelly's live report tonight, and then actually writing it in the live report rather than trying to do it at the same time, because it gets me so much that like I can't do both. I can't sit there and write and watch at the same time. So just I'm too entertained. So I can't disagree with anything there. I love the segment. I think this is probably going to lead into the Grizzly Young Vets versus LA Knight, Cameron Grimes. I don't really know how much longer they'll have the two of them tagged together afterwards. But we've seen odd pairings stay together longer. So who knows? Who knows what could happen here? All right, let's head back to the phone lines here and see if Darrell is there. Darrell, are you alive? Are you there? Darrell.
He got suspended off of Twitter, too. So, you know.
I know.
I don't know. I was going to say, like, oh, I'll just tweet him and see what's going on, but can't do that. What'd you do, Darrell? What's going on, buddy?
All right. Well, I mean, I don't think we suspended him from the show. So Darrell, hey, if you're there, we'll try you again a little bit later. We'll try you again a little bit later. And we do have other people on the line tonight, but nobody wanting to talk. So if any of you guys do want to talk, to be part of the conversation, hit one on your switchboard, and you can do just that. You know what? I also just realized that I didn't give out ways that you guys could talk to us on here on the show. So that is 515-605-9345, and you can hit one on the switchboard, as I just said, to talk to us, or pwtorchnxt@gmail.com, and let us know what you thought of the show. So right now we're going to do just that. We're going to go over to the mailbag just as soon as I bring the tab back up, because I already closed it. And we're going to go to an email from Jack Argyle. Hey guys, hope you're doing all well. After watching Keith Lee and Karrion Kross, I've heard a lot of people say about the success rate of NXT call-ups to the main roster. You guys will know with watching NXT 8 years back, how many stars have come from NXT? Charlotte, Seth Reigns, Seth Rollins, Big E, Sasha, Becky, Bayley, just to name a few. Do you guys think it's reasonable to expect every call-up to be a success, or should every 1 in 5 call-ups, for example, be considered a success? We've seen people who weren't expected to succeed get a lot of success, such as Alexa Bliss and Carmella. What do you guys think? How high should our expectations be? Thanks, guys, and stay safe. Jack A. from Swansea, Wales. So, okay, not everybody can be a success. Not everybody, if everybody is the top star, nobody's the top star, right? So I don't think every single call-up from NXT to the main roster should be immediately, you know, shot to a main event title or something like that. But, man, I wish they were treated a little bit better than they are. You know, Karrion Kross, for example, this past week, I wasn't on the show last week to talk about it, but, oh, my God, it was half the reason I actually didn't want to, like, I didn't do the show last week. Partly I was tired, I had a really long day at work, but I was also so disenfranchised by watching Karrion Kross get pinned in 2 minutes and 30 seconds by Jeff Hardy, who was on a losing streak, and he lost his undefeated streak to that. Not so happy about that. Now, I haven't really been the biggest supporter and proponent of Karrion Kross on NXT, but man, you spent all this time to build up a guy and then immediately get squashed on the main roster. I just didn't like it. Not a fan. Then obviously Keith Lee coming back and his debut last week on Raw and loses. And he lost again to Karrion Kross. But at least those are two former NXT guys, right? And Kross seemed to get, I haven't actually watched Raw yet, but I think Kross did get a relatively dominant win over him. That said, I don't think, like I said, it's not reasonable for every single call-up to be a success. But when you get these big guys that, that are big names down at NXT, like Karrion Kross, you bring them up, treat them as a big deal, especially if he's walking around with the NXT title around his waist, which he did. He may not have had Charlotte with him, but he had the NXT belt around his waist and then lost. It was, I don't know. I mean, I hadn't quite gotten around to listening to last week's episode. We've been remodeling our office, so I haven't gotten a chance to do a lot of stuff this week. So I don't know what you guys actually said about this whole thing last week, to be honest with you. But I know I wasn't super happy about seeing the NXT champion get pinned super fast on the main roster. And I personally felt like it was a slap in the face to NXT, period. But I think, some of the guys that could get called up, should be looked at as a bigger deal. At least bring them in as a big deal. You can always knock them down the card, knock them down a peg a little bit after they're brought in. But to bring somebody in with seriously like no momentum like that is, it just doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever at all. Tom?
First impressions are extremely important. I remember being upset that Baron Corbin, whom I was high on, it still am, but coming out of NXT, I was high on him, and I thought that he should have been the Shield's mystery partner at Payback or whatever pay-per-view that was, where it ended up being Jericho. And Corbin was brought in, I'm pretty sure, not very long after that. And just doing the obligatory Dolph Ziggler feud and I think probably going 50-50 with him. And that upset me a bit. But I think just after seeing this for so many years, and I don't want to rehash too much of what I said last week, I understand the reality of the situation and that Vince is not booking for people who watch NXT, and Vince isn't even watching NXT, which is a major part of the problem. Like, don't get me wrong. Yes. Could it be a heck of a lot better if there was a lot more communication between the main roster and their developmental system? Of course. But I also have to remember, very, very few people had the had the opportunity to be at the Ohio Valley Fairgrounds or whatever they're called to see the Leviathan. And so I don't know how upset we really were when Deacon Batista was introduced and his career turned out okay. Now, granted, he's a guy who had a lot of things going on for him at a different time in WWE when there were slightly different mentalities, like ruthless aggression, whatever you want to define that as. But yeah, I mean, you definitely said the thing that I always go to, that not everybody can be in a top spot, but when somebody's got a lot of potential, I think you do want to introduce them in a significant way, and then they can go, oh boy, it's tough, because if you get introduced in a big spot, you can only go down from there rather than build from there. Like, Tyler Breeze is always the example I go to, and if I had never seen Tyler Breeze in NXT, I would never have been upset with how he was treated on the main roster, because what we were shown seemed to be him working at his potential. He wasn't given an opportunity to do much beyond that. But since, I guess that's what I'm trying to say, is that part of the reason why we perceive this as a problem is because we are seeing the developmental territory, different though it is, being its own show now. And so we can form our own opinions about these people before they get launched onto the main roster if we haven't seen them on the indies or whatever. I'm trying to cover so many bases and thereby talking all over the place. But that's what happens with this subject. It's sort of, we get different versions of this question thrown at us all the time. And I'll think about them off the air. I'll read the emails and think about them. And then it's just sort of like, you know what? It's just whatever's going to come out on the air, because we get asked all the time, and it's just sort of whatever points am I going to hone in on. And I think it's just a matter of thinking realistically. That's one of the reasons why I was so high on Odyssey Jones last week, because he was sight unseen for me before that. I was aware of him, but I had no idea what he had. And seeing what he had, I was like, yeah, this is the kind of guy you should be putting on TV for the, quote, developmental brand, because he's a guy who could realistically actually be booked significantly the way that Vince books WWE. You look at somebody like Andrade, is another example that I will go to a lot. My favorite contemporary male worker out there. How can you miss with that guy? But I feel like NXT failed as a developmental system in that regard, because they did not prepare Andrade to succeed on the main roster. So there are a lot of different factors that go into measuring how a call-up from a developmental system can be considered a success or not. And you talk about somebody like a Carmella, who even after 6 years on the main roster of remaining a prominent figure at in various degrees, you know, a lot of people would still call her a relative failure. But yeah, that's absolutely a major success. So I think that hodgepodge of everything I just said is just, it's just another version of what I say every time we get this question, but hopefully there's something to mine out of there. I just think we have to think realistically. Could it be better? Absolutely. But this is how it is. And Cross still has a higher ceiling than he's being booked at right now. And it seems like they have the intention of at least raising him to that. So we shall wait and see if he gets out of this Deacon Batista phase.
What I just thought was really weird about last week is when he actually came out with the NXT title. How many times have we seen NXT, whether they're tag champions or champions or whatever, they come out on the main roster, they don't have their belt with them. Not always. I mean, Kevin Owens did when he came out to do the you know, John Cena Open Challenge and all that stuff. But like, why not treat him like Kevin Owens? It's just, I hear what you're saying. Like, you know, they don't, it's not like, like before, you know, we didn't see OVW and things like that. So, you know, I totally get what you're saying, but they're broadcasting this now, and they're trying to make this, or at least Triple H is trying to make this a third brand. So it's like, if this is something that, I mean, 500,000 plus people are watching every week, why are you then going to take that person and essentially bury them to 500,000 people? I don't know. It's a double-edged sword, I guess, because I hear what you're saying too. Is like, you know, you start at the top is the only place, you know, you can only really go down from there. But I don't know. It is. It's tough. I mean, we could spend all day on this, I guess, but you know, let's not, because we have other things to cover. One more time, we'll try this again. Let's go back to Darrell and see if he's there. If not, Darrell, we'll talk to you again next week. Darrell, are you there? And I don't hear any background noise, so I'm going to say no.
Darn.
All right. Well, Darrell, we miss you, buddy. We'll talk to you again next week. All right. With that, let's why not? I still got the emails up. Oh, no, I don't. I just closed it. I closed the tab as I still got the emails up. Why did I do that? All right. Here we go. I got them back up now. All right. So we're going to go to another email here from JB. JB says, hey team, it's JB from Detroit. What do you guys think about What do you guys think being on Sci-Fi for 2 weeks will do to NXT's ratings? Expanding on that, do you think the timing will hurt the build to the first stadium takeover show in a year and a half? Finally, what NXT call-up in the last year do you think Vince is trying to actively bury more, Keith Lee or Karrion Kross? You know, I didn't read this email before. As always, love the show and go VIP. Typically, I try to read the emails before, and this week I didn't get to, so I was trying to prepare for the show after writing a live report. Anyway, what do I think about Sci-Fi? I mean, it is what it is. Unfortunately, the Olympics are the Olympics, so, you know, NXT is gonna, you know, not quite as big of a deal as the Olympics, so I could see why it's getting bumped off. But I think it's probably not the greatest thing for NXT, to be completely honest with you. I didn't even know if I had Sci-Fi. Tonight, like, I went to go actually go find NXT, and I have YouTube TV, and I'm scrolling up and down, and it's like one of the last channels, right? It actually took me a minute to find it. I got a little concerned that I might not have it. You know, I'm sure not as many people have Sci-Fi as USA Network. It's probably going to hurt them a little bit. But, you know, it may hurt the build to take over a little bit. However, you've got what are the ratings? Like, you get like 600,000 people watching NXT a week on average, give or take, right? Sometimes more, sometimes less. But you've got millions of people that end up watching the recaps on YouTube from, you know, WWE's YouTube channel and things like that too. So, you know, ratings are a thing we talk about all the time, but like the content's still out there. The content's still there for people to digest. So I think people are still going to wind up digesting the content. They just may not watch the live show. And it probably won't really lead to that much of a problem in terms of takeover build. And actually the, you know, the takeover event itself. Yeah. Would it be nice to see it on USA? Sure. But unfortunately it's not. The Keith Lee, Karrion Kross thing, we could get back into that, but I'm not going to. Tom, you can if you want.
No, Keith Lee's story is not quite told yet, so I'll refrain on that one, although I'm tempted to say that he's not doing himself any favors there. I'll leave the math, the ratings math, to Wade, but it seems like, you know, when AEW had to switch nights, when other shows get preempted, and, you know, NXT has been in that situation switching nights before, and they held up okay. That was a different situation. They branded it as like what Super Tuesday or whatever they called it, and they really promoted it well. But they promoted this pretty well, I think, and I have a feeling like the math will remain consistent, that they'll go down, but no more significantly than other brands do when the same thing happens to them. So I'm sure the audience will find it. Although I had a similar experience to you, just trying to remind myself that it was on Sci-Fi, and then once I remembered, actually finding Sci-Fi and on my streaming service. Will the build be affected? First of all, I don't think. I mean, unless the announcement is to come, or if I've missed it and it's also not been updated on the Wikipedia page yet, I am pretty sure this is happening in the Performance Center again, this takeover. But I don't think it will affect the build. When the spoilers for the tapings started hitting Twitter, the rhetoric around it and all that, which matched my own reaction to it, was, oh, so they're not, just because they're on Sci-Fi doesn't mean that they're not going to do major storytelling beats. Some major stuff is happening at these tapings building toward takeover and regarding some long-term stories that they've been building to. But then watching the show, it was like, oh, okay, but those two major things that came out, they were the only things, and everything else was pretty minor, I think. But I think it'll be fine. I think if anything, timing-wise, I'm worried about, it's that when I read the email, I was like, you know what, it actually might work out better for them, because they had to go back to, even if for just two episodes, they had to go back to the old NXT taping mentality of planning out a story ahead of time, and then you can't do anything with it because it's already in the can. No matter what Vince does to Karrion Kross, it's already in the can. But this timing is going to work out to where they're going to have, I think, two more weeks after Sci-Fi. When I did look at the calendar, if I'm remembering correctly,
right.
I think it's 2 weeks. They're going to have 2 weeks to be like, oh crap, look what they did to him on Raw. We need to change something or fiddle with something. I'm not really personally worried about it. It does kind of feel like I'm the only one who's not worried about it, because everybody else is. But I really don't care what they do with him on Raw. There's such little crossover in the continuity. And again, would it be better if there was? Absolutely. But there's not, and there so rarely is. So just because there isn't this time, I'm not extra upset about it. I think that's the only situation where it might be slightly affected, even though I don't expect it.
Yeah, no, and you are right. It is actually going to be in the CWC. I don't know why I was thinking that they were following the main roster for SummerSlam, but they're not. According to Wikipedia, it still says Capital Wrestling Center, and I don't think they said otherwise tonight either. So, I think you're right. And hey, while we're here, I was going to say we'll go to the last email because I just assumed Kevin Catani sent us an email, but Kevin, you're slacking this weekend, man. You're slacking.
Yeah, and everybody's watching the Olympics.
Yeah, I guess, man. I'm gonna scold you. I'm gonna scold you on Twitter. Anyway, so we're done with emails. Let's go back to the show proper here. So we'll go to what do we want to talk about next? Let's talk about the. We'll talk about Imperium versus Hit Row. So we had Fabian Aichner and Martel Barthel go up against Ashante the Adonis and Top Dollar. God, I love that name, Top Dollar. I hated it at first, but you know what? It has grown on me, and I think it's probably one of the better names on the brand. Top Dollar.
It instantly reminded me of Sugar Hill Gang, so I was like, yep, yeah. It's a pass.
Yeah, no, like at first it was like Top Dollar, eh. But yeah, no, like it took a week. It only took a week. Loved it. We had, like I said, we had Imperium versus Hit Row. That went approximately 12 minutes. It was a bit of a hiccup on my part because my stopwatch apparently stopped halfway through, and I don't know exactly how long it was stopped for. It was approximately 12 minutes or so, that it ended when Legado del Fantasma ran to the ring and distracted Hit Row just long enough for Imperium to get the victory. I thought this was a great match. Adrian Adonis is, man, he is a bump machine. Martel Barthel and Fabian Aichner did a great job of kind of keeping him away from Top Dollar throughout the course of the match, kind of segmenting him away from Top Dollar. They did a great. Then there was kind of a bit of the story of the match. They were trying to keep him away from Top Dollar, obviously, and they just would not let him tag, not let him make the tag. There was maybe 3-4 times where it looked like he's just about to make it, and he couldn't do it. I thought that was some great storytelling. And it made that hot tag once he finally did hit Top Dollar, made it feel just a little bit more like a little bit more special, give it a little more oomph. And man, Top Dollar came in, absolutely laid waste to Imperium, and looked great doing it. Unfortunately, looked a little bit silly then leaving the ring to chase Legado up the ramp. I don't remember if it was all three members of Legado or was just Escobar. I think it might have just been Escobar now I think about it, but still, regardless. And then realizes that his partner's getting double teamed in the ring and runs back and misses the pin. Looked a little bit stupid there, but otherwise, in the ring, like of Imperium versus Hit Row.
Yeah, I think with the Walter connection, it's still weird to me to see Imperium just kind of being a designated job team. I don't know if it's more so now or less so now that they fired their other designated job teams. So that's just sort of where these guys default to. But Barthel and Aichner came up into Imperium. They made their way to Imperium by enhancing other talent. So they did a good job of that here. Again, they excel at that. And, of course, Adonis and Top Dollar held up their end just fine. I agree that Adonis was the standout of the match, if I'm reading into what you said, well, to sum it up in that way. And I noticed that just last week I was saying we're going to be able to track how well Hit Row is translating to the crowd. And Beth tried to do this whole, like, if you're here at the PC, then you can hear them saying Hit Row all night. And, you know, you never hear the crowd saying that. Maybe they do it when they're standing in line outside. Like the same way that, you know, the first taping I went to, everybody was passing out Street Profits solo cups, and then we weren't allowed to bring them in. I was thinking of bringing my own, and I emailed Full Sail, like, hey, can I do this? And they were like, yeah. We talked to WWE security, and they said no. And then, of course, they started selling their own, so that was why. But anyway, I we're going to be able to track their success by seeing how many people in the crowd.
How much did they sell those solo cups for? I gotta ask.
I want to say it was $10.
Good God!
Because it was like, I don't know what material it was. It was probably a plastic that you can put in the dishwasher safely and whatnot. But I think it was $10, and it wasn't even the same color as the one Montez Ford drinks out of. So it was like, yeah, I'm not buying that. Yeah. But when Top Dollar says, whatever he says, something, 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 top dollar. And then it's the call and response, and you're supposed to say not nada. The volume of the not nada is how we can track how well Hit Row is doing. And I heard it tonight. It wasn't super loud, but it was the first time I heard it, so we're tracking it.
Tracking it indeed. Tracking it indeed. I thought this was great. I think Hit Row is still they're still a work in progress, obviously, and I think their reaction is a little bit more muted than I expected. Now they're in front of a live crowd, but I have a feeling that they're quick. Well, not that they're now in front of a live crowd. They've been in front of a live crowd, but you know what I mean. Now that they're kind of out there a little bit more, but yeah, I don't know. I think they're going to probably really end up winning them over. They're such a great act, just super entertaining.
So funny. There's a lot of crowd interaction that goes on with them, and I like listening to the NXT guy who doesn't enjoy AEW. There are a couple people who somehow figure out a way to sit in the exact same spot in the bleachers every single show. And these are longtime tapings goers. I've seen them over and over again, but they somehow find a way to get in the exact same prominent spot in the crowd every single time at these PC shows. And they are always just looking down at their phones during these Hit Row segments. And I'm like, are they trying to, like, I know they go to the AEW shows too. Are they more into that? And now they're going to NXT and trying to make it look like the crowd isn't into it or something. So that's just what goes through my sick and twisted mind when I see them there. But yeah, I like, come on, say not nada with top dollar.
Not nada, not nada. Anyway, let's move on here. Let's move on. What else we got? We'll move down the line. Casey Catanzaro and Kaden Carter versus Frankie Monet and Jesse Kamea. Went about 3 minutes and 29 seconds. It was about as good of a match as you'd think it probably would have been. It wasn't bad at all. I think Casey and Kaden looked great. They ended up getting the win here over Frankie Monet and Jesse Kamea. And that was at right at the end. Robert Stone tried to give Monet a weapon to use. I think it was his leather portfolio. It might have been a shoe. I don't know. I caught it out of the corner of my eye, and I couldn't quite figure out what it was. But he tried to give her some sort of a weapon to use. Monet was like, whoa, no, I'm not using that. And it was, again, just enough of a distraction to allow Carter and Catanzaro to hit a 450 splash / suplex type of a double team move. They've done it a couple times before to get the win here. This looks like it's probably going to wind up with Frankie Monet afterwards. She tore Robert Stone a new you know what as Wade Barrett was actually introducing the next segment. You could still hear her screaming at him in the background, which I thought was fantastic, because she's probably not mic'd, so it's just like the live crowd mics that were picking it up. But you could still hear her screaming at Robert Stone. So I have a feeling that, I don't know, next week we may end up seeing the Frankie Monet brand, maybe not the Robert Stone brand. She was also asked earlier in the night, what her association with the Robert Stone brand is, and she kind of gave a bit of a non-answer. She didn't really say what it was. She just said what it could be, and that's when Casey Catanzaro and Kaden Carter came out and basically said, hey, we're better than you, because in so many words, which set up this match here. But like I said, I thought this was great. Casey and Kaden, they're one of my more favorite tag teams in the women's division here. Not that there's a whole hell of a lot of them, but I've loved these two, especially since they started teaming up. They've got some great chemistry together. They work well together. They look great together. So I was glad to see them get a win here over the Frankie Monet brand, and actually get some sort of prominent win. Even if it was a distracted win, it's always nice to see them get a W. Tom?
Absolutely. I'm broken record every time they have a match on the show, win or lose. It's a pleasure seeing Team Ninja do their thing. I really like tracking their progress. And, Jesse Kamea has improved as well. I've said over and over how it's just bizarre how she was one of the most fun things about the Coconut Loop when she was doing her geeky babyface Jesse Elben act. And then she just turned into a very, very, very generic heel, and that's the version of her that's been on TV. But she did well out there. Honestly, it was to the point where Monet, I don't even like saying this, but Monet seemed like the weak link out there. And a couple of lacking outings in a row for her have made me wonder if when I was watching, you know, intermittently, admittedly, but when I was watching her stuff on Impact here and there, if I was too forgiving just because of, you know, the way she works her character. She works her character so well that it makes up for any other deficiencies. And she's not getting too much of an opportunity to do that here. You mentioned the Frankie Monet brand or whatever they would call it. And there's the question of what Mandy Rose is up to as well, which I'm optimistic about because I don't mind Mandy Rose. What I said last week was if she disappeared off the face of the earth, I would not notice, but I don't mind her. And I even have a couple of very nice things to say about her. For example, she was my favorite. She was my pick to win, the one that I voted for in the Tough Enough, the last season of Tough Enough she was on. But you know, she's talking to JC and Gigi, two members of the new blood of the women's division who I would like to see more out of. So if that actually does lead to a couple more appearances for them to show off what they can do, then that's great. But the question is, like, what is the end game of this introductory chapter of Frankie Monet? And boy, whatever it is, they have got to move onto it, because every single time she is on screen with the Robert Stone brand, a giant chunk is ripped away from her potential on the brand. It's just every single time she is on screen. I mean, I didn't even catch the shouting you're talking about, but even when she's opposed to Robert Stone, just the fact that she's aligning with this loser and going out there and losing and being the one to take the fall, I'm not even worried about, you know what, I'm not even worried about her taking the fall. I'm just worried about seeing her on screen with this guy who has been characterized for over a year as a total loser, and she's just all right with going in there and wrestling with his with Jesse Kamea, not even Aaliyah. So yeah, like, hopefully, I mean, I don't even know at this point. I'm trying to think, does she have some sort of machinations working where she's just aligned with them for some sort of convenience? But yeah, I don't know. Moral of the story, when they're on screen, when anybody is on screen with Robert Stone, it just really makes them seem bottom barrel.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely, for sure. I mean, I would so much rather see her doing something else than this. But, you know, at least I feel like she's doing a good job, what she's there to do. And I mean, she's putting the effort in anyway. So, but no, I agree. I would so much rather see her doing something else, to be completely honest with you, now that, like, granted, the Miz, it was going to say, cause the Miz is injured, but I still like what he's doing in the wheelchair, but with the Miz injured or something, I'd hate to see her out of NXT, but like at the same time, I'd almost like to see her and Morrison together too on the main roster. So
no,
I don't know.
I agree. And even like that's just a matter of convenience for what I already thought was the right landing spot for her. She should have just gone straight to Monday Night Raw.
Oh yeah. She's absolutely ready made to go to the main roster. So, you know, I mean, a stop in NXT, sure, the women's division, I was going to say the women's division could use her, but, man, they still got a stacked division, even with some of the call-ups and things. So, I don't know. I feel like she probably could have just gone straight to the main roster. But, you know, I guess it is what it is. Continuing with the women's division, I was going to talk about Mandy Rose, Gigi Dolan, and JC Jane, but you already did bring that up. So why don't we then go, we'll kind of quickly just mention that Io Shirai and Zoe Stark were shown in what I'm assuming is the warehouse training facility that they've been using nearby, since they've been using the Performance Center as their arena. And Stark and Io Shirai were there. Looked like they were the only two there. Shirai was training in the ring and was kind of leaving the ring as Stark walked up to her and said that they should be training together to get on the same page and form a partnership. And Shirai was like friends? And she shook her head no and tried to get away. And Stark basically convinced her that they should hang out and train together and get on the same page. And Shirai reluctantly agreed. This is really all we saw out of the two of them tonight. I kind of like this pairing. It's different. I like the fact that Shirai is kind of the veteran on the brand, and she's, you know, almost reluctantly having to take Stark under her wing, Stark trying to be friends with her and things like that. They work well together. I want to see a bit more of them working together before I say whether I really like them or not. I think so, but I'd like to see them in a tag team at least one more time. But regardless, I think Zoe Stark is going to be, I think she's got some amazing potential here, and putting her with somebody of the caliber of Shirai is a, it tells you that, because they wouldn't put somebody with Shirai that they didn't think had any potential. But also too, like they work well together, and Io Shirai, being that veteran is perfect to walk somebody like Zoe Stark, who's still very new to the business, kind of through the business and kind of how to be on that bigger stage. So, I'm cool with this. I'm curious to see where they end up taking it. Any thoughts, Tom?
Yeah, or at the very least, give the rub for Io's part. If you do, in time, decide that you like this pairing, you will be joining me and Kelly in liking it. We are also high on the two of these wrestlers being paired together. And I enjoyed this. I have no idea why Io doesn't like Zoe Stark. I don't know why Io doesn't like her championship tag team partner, but she's being respectful about it, she's being very blunt about it, but it's not disrespectful per se. But now that Io has begrudgingly agreed to hang out with Zoe, even though they didn't set a date or anything, it was just like, hey, let's hang out. And then Zoe awkwardly continued standing there as Io walked away. And it's like, well, you guys didn't. Okay. But we've already got all these Cameron Grimes skits. Jeremy Borash needs to now take some time to follow them around and get them like playing party games or trying new cocktails that they don't end up liking and like having their own little silly skits.
I mean, I'd be all for it. I'd be all for it, especially if Jeremy Borash is behind it. And it didn't turn out to be like the Viking Raiders and Street Profits skits bowling. And that was just bad. That was bad. I'd be all for that.
If you go back in the archives, there are a couple of segments of me talking with Wade, playing devil's advocate in favor of those. But I don't necessarily advise that anybody seeks those out.
No, I mean, I'm not even going to get into it. I'm not even getting into it. all right. Now, let's get into the one thing that Kelly probably wishes he was here to talk about tonight. So earlier,
I'm expecting a message from him. He's watching the show as we record this. I'm expecting him
he's on it. He's on it right now.
There it is.
Literally, he's on it as we speak. He just sent us a message going, "Woo, don't tease me, Dakota." Oh, he doesn't know what happened. He didn't know what happened yet. All right, this is exciting. Anyway, I almost want to tell him to join the show.
I'm saying that to him right now.
Yeah, actually, guys, hold on. Maybe we can get Kelly to chime in here, but. As Tom is talking with Kelly, let's talk about what happened here tonight. So Raquel Gonzalez said that she wanted to address the audience. And right off the bat, I knew something was up when she came out with Dakota Kai and basically said she's been a very dominant champion. She's beaten everybody else. There's nobody else here that could actually take her on and everything like that. Dakota Kai then grabbed the mic and essentially reiterated everything that she's a more dominant champion than Charlotte and Rhea Ripley and named off a whole plethora of champions. Shayna Baszler, said that she's been a dominant champion and whatnot, and there's nobody else here to beat her, and that as long as she is by Raquel's side, she will be the champion. And that's when I knew it was coming, because not 10 seconds later, as Raquel Gonzalez was on the turnbuckle celebrating, she jumped off the turnbuckle and Dakota Kai punched her in the face or kicked her. I don't remember. I was so happy that it was happening. I don't even know how it happened, but Raquel Gonzalez wound up on the ground and Dakota Kai picked up the title, held it high overhead, laid it on Raquel Gonzalez and walked out back. So that was a thing that happened. It was pretty cool. And it was actually finally happened here. And speaking about finally happening, I think we might finally happen to get Mr. Kelly Wells on the phone, at least maybe. I placed the call. We'll see if he joins. But until
right.
he does.
While Tom, you're saying that,
yes.
I will say that, you know, I heard some commotion.
Commotion.
I need to know exactly where we are with this. I'm watching NXT right now, and it happened. We knew this
Did
was
it happen? Did it happen?
We knew, yes, we knew. And, you know, they didn't really hide this.
No, not
like
at all.
We've seen what way this was going, but they come out together. She shakes her hand and says, this is because of one woman, and I'm bursting with joy inside, knowing where this is going, and face wash in the corner, and here we go. Yes, we called this, but yeah,
it was still a beautiful moment.
A little emotional over here. I'm a little over halfway through the show. Had a great night out. Went to a restaurant and there were cops there the whole time because a drunk weirdo was trying to kidnap one of the servers. So I had
a very strange thing for you to have been doing, Kelly.
You took the words out of my mouth.
Yes, I probably should have set that up for myself to be the kidnapper.
Yeah.
But sadly, I was not. It was a terrifying dude. But yeah, that was my night. So very excited about this development. I don't know where we are with things. I can talk about stuff I've already seen. I can talk about Ridge Holland.
We haven't talked about Ridge Holland yet. We're going backwards.
We were just getting to this, and we were both in the middle of saying, like, oh, I wonder if Kelly's going to message us about that soon. And that's when your Ric Flair woo came in.
Quite literally, like, I wonder if Kelly's watching this. And then, boom, your message popped up.
I had to hold down the O for a very long time. It was a long woo.
It was a very long woo, guys. A very long woo.
Yes.
Just because I haven't said my piece on it yet, I will throw out there that I have to wonder in the back of my mind if, because there was no avoiding this spoiler from the tapings last Wednesday on Twitter, I knew that this was when this was going to happen. Yes, I agree, Kelly, the way that Dakota was scripted was clever and definitely planting the seed. And that was the highlight of the segment, saying that you're here because of one woman and you will remain champion for as long as we are together, or however she phrased that. That was very clever. But the reason I felt this could have been done better is because the segment only existed for the turn. The turn didn't develop out of anything else. They only went out there to talk about nothing. They had nothing to say. It was just going out there to stand there and have Raquel smile a lot. You know, it was one of her segments. You know, she gets mean for 2 or 3 weeks, and then she has a segment where she goes out there and smiles a lot. So this was Raquel's smiley segment, and there was no other purpose except for the turn in the end. So I thought it was pretty transparent in that regard.
Yeah, Raquel addresses the NXT women's roster is not a thing.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That's what
that was on the preview.
Said. And the cool thing about what they showed on the screen was that it was Raquel and Dakota, like, locking hands and holding their hands up high, but Dakota looking at her in a way that if it wasn't obvious already, it's clear what they were promoting, that Dakota was going to turn. But yeah, you can work this into a different scene. I don't know what scene. It's not my job to come up with that, but it did indeed. It's like how this is a weird way to go, but what are you going to do? America's Funniest Home Videos, where they say, we always know when you're faking it because you wouldn't be filming guys working on a car. Like,
right.
There's no reason for this scene to exist otherwise. Yeah.
I knew that Grimes hitting Knight in the crotch with the golf club reminded me of something. It reminded me of JD on Scrubs, Zach Braff standing there and trying to set up for his like little kid neighbor to hit him in the crotch, and he's just posing there with his legs spread, waiting for it.
It was Mandy. What's the singer? Mandy.
Was it her? Yeah, you're right. It was her. Oh, yes.
Trust me.
It was that episode. Yes.
Don't question me on the Scrubs, man.
Mandy who? Mandy Moore?
She was a singer. She was a singer in the early
2000s. More.
Mandy
yeah.
Moore.
Yeah.
Mandy Moore. Mandy Moore. Thank you. I kept thinking Mandy Rose, and I'm like, it's not Mandy Rose.
Tangled, dude. She's successful.
Tangled. I still haven't seen that one, but I don't have kids.
It's her. You don't have to.
At last, we've seen the light.
Yeah.
All right.
He doesn't get that reference.
No, I don't. But that's okay, because this show's gone off the rails a little bit. So let's try and get back on track just a tad. Kelly, you sticking around, or are you going to watch the show?
I'm here. If you end up talking about something I haven't. You know what? I'm going to watch with one ear, and going to listen with the other. Yeah, my I'm not held down to normal senses.
Apparently not.
That's what I'm going to do.
I would love to have ear vision. I'd love to
there
have
you
ear
go.
Vision.
Yeah,
all right.
If you call on me, I'll be here.
Okay, sounds good. So we're going to go back and we'll talk about Carmelo Hayes versus Josh Briggs in the NXT Breakout Tournament. So we had both these guys going at it. Carmelo Hayes kind of being a bit of the underdog here. Going up against the much larger Josh Briggs. And this completely threw off my bracket because I kind of thought Josh Briggs was going to be going the whole way. However, I also had Carmelo Hayes kind of slotted in there as a second. So, you know, I guess it didn't completely screw up my bracket, but whatever. I actually really enjoyed this match. I thought Briggs probably should have got a bit more offense in considering that he's the bigger man, whatever, but at the end, after Carmelo Hayes went over, I'm like, okay, I guess I can understand that. I get down on that. This is the first time I've actually seen Josh Briggs in action. I know he was the former Evolve champion and whatnot, but I've actually never – I don't even know if I've seen him like in highlights or anything like that on YouTube or stuff. I liked him. I thought he worked pretty well. I really liked his choke slam. I was really surprised to see them use such a powerful choke slam and have Carmelo Hayes kick out of that so quick, but whatever. I also do like Carmelo Hayes. I know you guys weren't quite as high on him as I was when he faced Kushida a few weeks ago. I thought he looked pretty good, and I felt like the way that they were framing him there was setting him up for something, and apparently that it might be this. They also had, Duke Hudson is his name. He joined the commentary team after the first commercial break, or the only commercial break in this match, to talk about this match, because whoever won here will be facing Duke Hudson next week. And again, that was Carmelo Hayes going up against Hudson for next week. Hayes ended up winning after a tilt-a-whirl takedown and then a top rope leg drop for the win. So like I said, I thought this was great, and I'm definitely looking forward to the Breakout Tournament. I wasn't sure about it at first. Like, yeah, the Cruiserweight tournament, I thought it was great, but I'm like, okay, we're doing a lot of tournaments recently with this, the Dusty Classic and all that. I wasn't sure. I'm every week now, I'm definitely looking forward to the tournament. I think this is, might have been my, I don't know if this is my match of the night, but it might have been my second match of the night. I thought this was great, and I am looking forward to Carmelo Hayes down the road. I think they got something with him. Tom?
Yeah, I'm into this tournament, and if a match can be considered a bracket buster in a tournament that's on its third week and they're only just now showing us the brackets, this is definitely a bracket buster for me as well, since some people will remember that I said that this match was going to be the final match and Josh Briggs was going to go over. But what I wasn't considering, and seeing him take the fall tonight, I realized was that, it's not true. I was considering it a little bit, but Briggs already has the physical body going for him. He's already got that thing I was talking about earlier where, like, you just have to show him to Vince, and Vince will be like, oh, yeah, that guy. Hayes.
Oh, big, sweaty man.
Precisely. So, Hayes, you need to give him a little bit of something else. So Briggs, even though Swerve doesn't fit the same category, he's kind of like the Swerve of this year's tournament, where he could absolutely go to the final. He could absolutely win. But it doesn't really matter that he washed out in the first round because, he, like you said, he did that awesome choke slam right after an awesome big boot, which was delivered well but also particularly sold very well by Hayes. You don't always want to do that backflip thing, but he did it, and it worked in that spot. But Briggs is the kind of guy that doesn't necessarily need, like Swerve didn't need to win in the first round. He's doing just fine. So Briggs doesn't need that either. So that's all right. I just noticed in the bracket, they cut Briggs' hair, and they're not having him wear that goofy pauldron that he wore in Evolve. But on the bracket, his graphic has him wearing that pauldron. I just noticed that. But now I'm looking at Hayes being a giant killer and winning the whole damn thing over Odyssey Jones in the finals. Odyssey Jones being another guy who does not need to win this. With Joe Gacy as my dark horse, because I'm not familiar with him. Probably just the fact that you would pick what very much seems like an homage to John Wayne Gacy as your wrestling name. Like, sure, it's evocative in a certain way, but just that you would do that. I mean, I'm also the guy who thought it was tasteless that Finn Balor did a I knew the name was he did an Ed Gein thing in Texas, and then he did a Jack the Ripper thing in London, and I just thought that was tasteless. It was like, yeah, it's, you know, kind of like the Santos Escobar thing. This is a real dude who killed real people, and you're naming wrestlers after him. Okay, but whatever.
Jack the Ripper thing looked so cool.
All right, fair enough. But yeah, I thought the match was good. I did like Hayes against Kushida. The one I did not like against Kushida was Trey Baxter. He looked like he was molded out of vanilla pudding. I don't know. There's a specific. I don't know. I'll just stick with that. He looked like he was molded out of vanilla pudding.
Yeah, it didn't
sure.
quite look like he belonged.
I don't know. It just looked like some random dude they picked off the street to take a fall. But yeah, did I hit everything? I guess I liked Duke being on commentary because this dude excels at a lot of things, but what he excels at most is being arrogantly witty in a way that is self-deprecating, but he in character doesn't realize that it's self-deprecating. And it's just wonderful. So he was able to get some of that stuff in. They made me want a Haas fight between Hudson and Briggs, but I will be happy. There are multiple ways this tournament could go, and I would be happy with it. Carmelo Hayes could be the giant killer all the way to the end. Odyssey Jones could win. He doesn't need it, but he could. And Duke Hudson could win, another one who doesn't need it, but I mean, he would never shut up about it, and that would be awesome.
Indeed. Kelly, any comment?
Many comment. Yeah,
Many comment.
They didn't show us the brackets and have I want to say Brendan Fink, Duke Hudson
yeah.
there until now, but Duke being there for me really telegraphed that Carmelo was going to go over here, which is too bad because I really didn't know what to expect out of this, but I just don't think that a Briggs Hudson match does either of these budding heels any favors at all. If Hudson's act is going to work, he's got to be doing it against underdog baby faces. I also am worried that he telegraphed the finish to their next match because he said that this match was going to be a walk in the park, which is the kiss of death for these super arrogant wrestlers. I think Carmelo is fine. I think they think he's better than he is. He's okay on the mic. He's had some bad outings and some okay ones. I don't know. He's as a wrestler, he's good. I did say before that I thought he was a little creative wrestler. He's all the things that you expect a wrestler in 2021 to be able to do, but I wasn't sure there was anything that totally, totally set him apart. But they clearly like him, and that was very obvious on commentary. Beth sold the hell out of him, so there you go. I don't really know Gacy as a wrestler, but at this point, I'd almost bet on him versus Hayes in the final. I feel like Jones versus Hudson is definitely what I want, but it was that cocky statement that made me think that it would be the opposite way. Not that they can't do face versus face, but I really don't think they'll do heel-heel. And maybe they'll go face-face. I don't know. As far as Trey Baxter, I don't remember if it was Tom and I who talked about him or not. He was Blake Christian on the indies, and he's fine. He was in he did a lot of New Japan Strong episodes, but he did not get a lot of single stuff. He was stashed in like 8-man tags, and he did perfectly fine there. Coming in, bringing a lot of energy, and then primarily taking the fall or not being involved in it. He's decent. But yeah, he and Cora Jade are an item that I know, because they both Insta about it on a regular basis, but that's who he is. Don't know Gacy, but yes, indeed, the decision to take that name reminds me of kind of this horrorcore band called the JonBenet, being all edgelordy and calling their band the JonBenet, which I think is probably the grossest thing ever.
Yeah.
I too have creeped on Cora Jade's Instagram page, so you're not alone.
There you go.
All right. Well, after that creepy band name, let's keep going. Let's keep going, moving back here. We'll talk about Samoa Joe coming out and calling out William Regal. Well, actually, before he did that, Samoa Joe's music hit, and he had looked like some sort of a contract in hand, an NXT leather portfolio thing, clipboard. He stormed to the ring with that in hand, and he went under the ring, grabbed a folding table, threw that into the ring. He threw a folding chair in the ring, and then called out William Regal, told him to come out and asked him to come out to the ring after saying that he knew Karrion Kross was essentially a chicken and a gutless coward by not showing up at the arena. Regal came out, and Regal was visibly like pissed. You could tell he was just mad and angry and upset after getting laid out by Cross last week to end the show. Joe said that he knew that Regal was probably going to wind up firing Cross tonight, but he said he had a better idea in 3 easy steps. Step 1, Joe resigned from NXT management. Step 2, Joe handed Regal an NXT contract where all Regal needed to do was sign it. And Joe was once again a member of the active NXT roster. And then step 3, I bet you can guess what step 3 is another piece of paper making a match for Samoa Joe versus Karrion Kross at NXT TakeOver 36 for the NXT Championship. And William Regal also signed that paper to make the match official. The two men shook hands, and just like that, Samoa Joe was back on the NXT active roster. So, as we kind of had a feeling was going to happen, it looks like we are going to get Samoa Joe and Karrion Kross for the NXT title, with Karrion Kross looking like he's going to be going up to the main roster. I would probably think we're going to see a 3-time NXT champion here in Samoa Joe. That's what I'm putting my money on. Tom, what are you putting your money on?
Kelly may have hit this. I forgot to mention that for some reason Jessica Carr was refereeing the breakout tournament match. That was
interesting.
I don't know if that got mentioned, but I missed it.
Yeah, he mentioned that on our Skype chat, but I don't think he brought it up on the show.
So Joe, I you know, I'll backpedal to last week very briefly just to say that I should not have said that maybe, even though I thought everything else was good that he did, maybe you don't want to promise that you're going to put somebody to sleep and use that exact terminology, be the babyface and promise something to the crowd if you're not actually going to put somebody to sleep at the end of the night. But what I realized reflecting on it after the fact is that he promised that someone would be going to sleep. And so that someone ended up being Regal. So that's actually rather clever. So I recant my dubious take there. I don't know. I guess after seeing it play out, it's okay that Joe was walking to the PC with a contract because you think it's just a contract for the match. And so I was just like, oh, gee, what's he going to do? But it was a little more interesting than that. Joe, of course, I mean, you can say this about every single Joe segment. He's so easy to believe because the ferocity in every single word he says is just so believable. But yeah, it's it's funny because it really seems Cross, who is just like, well, I'm so powerful and you know, I can do whatever I want. It really seems like he screwed himself by choking out Regal, because now the fair-minded Regal is against him. And he just played it so well every time Joe presented something to him, and he, without saying anything, gave that look and signed it. That was performed very, very well, told a story. Joe saying that he was quitting NXT management at first sounded like a very quick compromising of an intriguing role that he was in. But I very quickly processed that to feel like it's confirmation, you know, since he said, like, oh, re-sign me as an active performer, which, I mean, historically that could mean anything moving forward. It doesn't mean that he's wrestling every other week. But just saying that, putting that out there, it feels like confirmation that he will be more active than just a special attraction at takeovers and whatnot. And I don't know, maybe that'll be the case, still sort of processing that back end of it. But that succeeded in making me think that Joe winning at TakeOver is more believable, because although it seems like that would be the logical way to go, since Joe is the next challenger and Cross is already appearing on the main roster, so he's got to drop the belt eventually, it also just doesn't feel like Joe is the kind of person that they would put the belt back on. You know, even with NXT's altered DNA these days, it just seems like an odd choice. The advantage, though, is that they've already set up multiple feuds for him in Cole, Dunn, and Gargano. So there's a lot going on with this. I have not been as quick as so many other people to be like, oh, well, Joe is totally winning here. But the way they framed it tonight pushed me that way a little bit. So this was a success, just like last week was. This was a success in making the Joe Cross showdown at TakeOver much more intriguing.
And Kelly, anything?
Yeah, sorry, they were just playing the replay of Dakota Kai laying out Raquel. So just as good the second time, folks. Yeah,
indeed.
This was the kind of scene that we knew was coming, so they had to put a slightly better spin on it, as Tom was intimating there, that, you know, he's walking there with the contract. So anything we get beyond that is gravy. So I think they did a pretty good job with getting a scene out of the way that had to be done. Could be exposition hell if they really wanted it to be, but also making that scene interesting. They're still stuck in that space where they got to be careful with how much they do with Karrion Kross. I don't know if you guys talked about this earlier or if this even came up, but Karrion Kross, I know I haven't seen this segment later in the show yet, but they had to shoot it a second time because of fans chanting for Jeff Hardy, which is why you don't do these things at the same time.
I think that's probably going to show up next week.
I think that's next week. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's it must be next week then. That's why you don't do these things at the same time. So anyway, where the hell were we?
They should have predicted that and had him do something that wasn't intended for TV first, just to let the fans get it out of their system.
Right. Yeah. Which is that's something that WWE has done on numerous occasions, or doing a dark when they wanted reintroduce somebody as a heel, but they know they're going to get a face reaction. They introduce them not on TV, and then they have them do the heel thing later on. Simple stuff, but apparently they didn't do it. But I guess next week we'll see. I thought that the Joe thing was handled pretty deftly. And like Tom, I don't think this is a total gimme here. If he's really going up, it does seem like the obvious thing to say that Joe's going to win it. It just seems like somebody else could get, well, whatever rub is left to give to get. They could also do a tournament if they wanted, and the only thing tempering me there is that NXT runs a lot of tournaments, so they probably don't need to run a tournament here.
I don't know. I think this
Gauntlet
is kind of
Eliminator.
Yeah, there we go.
Oh, right.
No, I think this is kind of a best case scenario because they did not have any plans to have Samoa in NXT. I mean, Samoa Joe got cut and Triple H was like, hey, whoa, no, I want you. So I think, and then they're, you know, obviously bringing Karrion Kross up, you know, I hear what you're saying. They could have somebody else get the rub from Kross or whatever, but why not have the bigger name in Samoa Joe win the title and then give the rub, give that bigger rub to somebody a little bit, you know, a little bit down the road. I think, I don't know. I personally think that's the way to go, but I certainly hear you guys saying as well. I'm just happy to see Joe back in NXT. Whether he's going to be an attraction or, you know, he's actually going to be wrestling on weekly TV is obviously yet to be determined. But regardless, even if he is just an attraction, like, so what? Show up on TV every once in a while just to show up, have his belt or not have his belt, to show up and be Samoa Joe and then actually have some big matches on takeovers. I'd be totally fine with that myself.
I mean, I suppose you got to get the championship on Tyler Rust somehow. So this is how you do it.
There we go. There we go. All right. And we have one more match to talk about here tonight, a couple more segments, and we've already hit all the emails. Kevin, you didn't send us one tonight. What's going on? I'm still waiting for it. I still had the mailbox up thinking it might be coming in. We had Timothy to kick off the show, Timothy Thatcher versus Timothy Thatcher and Tommaso Ciampa. They weren't fighting each other. They were together versus Pete Dunne and Oney Lorcan. And this match went on for about 13 minutes or so, just shy of, and Ridge Holland came out and attacked Timothy Thatcher from the crowd right before the end of the match. This allowed a little bit of a distraction. The distraction didn't necessarily lead to the, it wasn't like a distraction finish, but the distraction allowed for a momentum shift, which led to Dunn hitting the bitter end right at the end of the match for the three count. So we saw the return of Ridge Holland, and after the match, Ridge Holland joined Oney Lorcan and Pete Dunne in the ring to beat down Timothy Thatcher and Tommaso Ciampa. I forgot who they were for a second. To beat the two of them down, and we saw them leaving the arena later on. They asked Ridge Holland, you know, what he's doing, why he's teamed up with these guys. He didn't really say a whole lot other than Timothy Thatcher is not going to be the last one to get his face smashed in or something to those, some to that effect, something about smashing heads or faces or something, but smash was definitely used there when they basically cut away after that. I thought the match itself was good. It wasn't my favorite match with these four guys in it, to be honest with you. It was a little kind of slow and samey and kind of, you know, just I feel like a lot of rest holds and things like that. It wasn't a bad match by any stretch of imagination, but I don't think it was the best that I've seen out of these guys. And considering the best match that I've ever seen live in my life was Oney Lorcan versus Tommaso Ciampa at NXT Lowell in Lowell, Massachusetts in 2016, I was surprised that I wasn't quite as high on this match as I was on that one. But regardless, the bigger talking point here is Ridge Holland's back. And what does that mean for the team of Pete Dunne and Oney Lorcan, who've kind of just been, they've been affiliated together since they were part of Team McAfee. And now Pat McAfee's gone. He's now on SmackDown commentating over there. And then it was just Pete Dunne, Oney Lorcan, and Danny Burch. Danny Burch gets hurt. And so now you've got this kind of awkward pairing of Pete Dunne and Oney Lorcan. It's kind of nice to see somebody else getting brought in here that has a little bit he's just a little bit new, a little bit fresh. That's what I'm looking for. A little bit more fresh than the other two guys. Somebody new to kind of freshen things up a little bit here. I was really high on Ridge Holland before he got hurt. I thought he was destined for big things, at least like North American Championship or something along those lines. If not the title later on, the NXT title down the road, but at least probably North American title scene is where I was kind of slotting him in at. I was happy to see him back, happy to see him here in this spot. I think with the way he looks and he's so imposing, I think he's a great addition to Dunn and Oney Lorcan. Tom?
I guess I looked it up. That was the beginning of October last year that Ridge Holland's injury occurred. I mean, considering what it was, that's a bad of a recovery time, I don't think.
What was the injury? I don't remember.
I mean, didn't like one or both of his ankles just like completely snap in half, and at the same time he blew several muscles, you know, important ones that take a long time to heal.
He was supposed to catch somebody on a tope, right?
Right. Yeah, Lorcan and or Birch.
Lorcan, right. Yeah, and it was to set up what we thought was the Pat McAfee faction, which now exists entirely without him.
Right.
That's
right.
I forget.
And I feel like I saw something where it's hardly even worth saying because he's back. I thought I saw something on his Instagram or something where he said he was like back in a cast or whatever. Maybe he was just sharing a TBT. But yeah, the injury was so gnarly that it's equal parts and he's talented enough and promising enough that it is good to see him back. But it's also equal parts weird to see his legs functioning again, because that was just such a you know, not quite Sid's bone sticking out of his leg, but or through his boot or whatever that is. But you know, when I think of Ridge Holland, that's now what I think of. That is the image. So he's walking around the ring, and it's like Uncanny Valley. I'm like, this isn't supposed to be happening right now. This doesn't make sense. But yeah, the match was fine, as you're going to get with these guys. It's you're not going to put these guys in a ring and get something subpar. The highlight of the match to me was when Ciampa and Dunn were in the ring together, because it felt fresh. I don't think we've seen a lot of Ciampa versus Dunn. So even though this doesn't feel like it's going to be a singles feud, they absolutely could do a singles feud here. And we would get good matches out of it. I don't think I would trust that they would give us any more story other than them just growling at each other that they're the most badass guy on the brand. That's probably all the depth we would get, but the matches would be great.
I agree. I thought their interactions are great. I liked Tommaso Ciampa continuing to use like the shrug and kind of taunting Don and all that. But yeah, I think you're right. I don't remember seeing a lot of Ciampa and Dunn. And if we have, I don't know. It does feel fresh. It absolutely does feel fresh. So I would not mind seeing a little bit more out of those guys. Kelly, what do you think?
Apparently this is the last match we're talking about. Unfortunate, because I wanted to shine a light on Jesse Kamea's hilarious overacting, but but apparently that will have to wait until next time she's on TV. Also, just saw the segment where an unseen announcer tried to get a word with Dakota, and it was Dakota, can you explain your actions? If the only function of an unseen person is to deliver a line, then you do need somebody who can do it.
Yeah.
Anyway, so on our opening tag, yeah, this was a little bit house show for these four. But as we know now, it only existed to set up the return of Ridge Holland. And indeed, this is a guy that I kind of touted to both of you beforehand that I thought you would like a lot. I thought that Tom would like him in a lot of the same ways that he would like, not the same kind of talent, not the same act, but in the ways that he likes L.A. Knight, just a no-nonsense dude who's going to win a lot of short matches and build himself up that way. I certainly like the way that he beats the hell out of people, and it really looks like it hurts. But yeah, I'm really psyched to see Ridge back. I don't know if there was some hint that this was going to happen or what it was, but when I saw him, I don't know, maybe I saw something on Twitter and somebody had kind of let that one slip, but very, very excited to see him back and see where this little faction is headed. That could have five people, but one's injured and one is announcing on SmackDown. So not a bad tag match. I will just say that it reminded me yet again that it's so weird thinking of where Ciampa is on the card, considering where he has spent the vast majority of his time on the NXT card. It kind of reminds me of New Japan when somebody is done being at the very, very top. They are very swiftly de-emphasized, and they stay around and sometimes wrestle for another 5 years but they are just there to put the young guys over. It really, really feels like that's kind of where Ciampa has gone.
Certainly. And I mean, they could certainly build him back up down the line too, but yeah, it's certainly weird to think about. It's certainly weird to think that he's kind of fallen so far from grace. It's like, I was always thinking of him as that S tier guy on the roster, and certainly not there anymore, at least in my mind anyway. In my heart, yes, but maybe not on the roster. So we get a couple more segments to talk about here tonight before we can go to bed. We got one where Triple H, Shawn Michaels, and William Regal were shown in a pre-taped backstage segment to announce Walter versus Ilya Dragunov, the match that was on supposed to be on NXT UK and got postponed. I believe it was due to an injury to Walter, is now going to be on NXT TakeOver 36, which I'm certainly looking forward to. I love Walter and I love Ilya Dragunov, so this should be a fun match. You guys have anything you want to talk about on that real quick? I feel like you probably do.
I think that people should watch this match because one of them is going to die, and people should see the last match of one of these two guys.
Yeah, and just putting it on TakeOver, this is exactly what I said on Twitter when we were asked about it, but this always goes with the eternal caveat that I am not really paying attention to NXT UK beyond what I see on the Instagrams of the wrestlers I like there, like Pretty Deadly and things like that. But they did a Duran Duran reference today, so that's fresh in mind. But so I'm not super paying attention to what the storyline is, but it feels just looking at the fact that this match is happening that this is where Walter is going to lose. And I was thinking that going into it just being on the regular show, and the fact that they moved it to TakeOver makes me think that much more that this is the stage for Walter to finally lose the belt.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you there. I'm not really following NXT UK very much at all. Really, I don't think I've watched it since it's been back on the air after it took its hiatus from COVID, to be completely honest with you. So I don't really know what the story is myself, but I'm here for it. These two guys that I like, I know that they're going to go out there and put on a hell of a show. Kelly's got it. One of them's going to die. So let's see what happens. I would not be surprised either if we saw Walter lose it. He's had very dominant streak here, and it did seem a little weird that they were putting it on TV, not on a pay-per-view or anything like that. So, we'll see. We'll see. As I usually say, we'll see where it goes. I did that mostly for Kelly. Anyway, let's go back. What's that?
I smiled.
I figured. Okay, what else we got here tonight? We also had Malcolm Bivens and Roderick Strong backstage talking with Wade Barrett. Wade Barrett basically kind of just asked Roderick Strong how he got hooked up with Malcolm Bivens after basically quitting NXT. He was, after the Undisputed Era breakup, just to kind of rehash that, he was pretty forlorn and down after the breakup and essentially walked backstage with his wife, who at the time was still also a member of the company. He resigned and quit. And then we saw him a few months later show up alongside Malcolm Bivens, Tyler Rust, the other guy whose name I still can't remember, and Malcolm Bivens. Hideki Suzuki. That's wrong.
Not everything rhymes.
In my defense, you broke up a little bit there as you were talking. So hopefully that comes through on the recording and I don't sound like an idiot. I'll sound like an idiot, but not an idiot for missing what you said. Anyway, what was I talking about? Diamond Mine. Yes, Diamond Mine. So basically Roderick Strong said that he got a phone call from Malcolm Bivens when he was kind of feeling down and out. And Malcolm Bivens basically gave him a bit of a pep talk, and he decided Diamond Mine was for him. I thought this was a cool segment. I think Malcolm Bivens is with Roderick Strong for one reason and one reason only. Roddy can't talk. He can talk a little bit, but it was blatantly obvious to me at the end of this segment when Roderick basically looked at the looked at the camera and said something along the lines of, Bob, when I beat you, this is over. And that was it. And it's like, okay, what's this? Is it the feud between the two of you that we still don't really know why is happening, other than the fact you used to be the other two Undisputed Era guys and just may as well throw you in a feud? Okay, I'm fine with it. I'm really glad to see Roddy back and in this spot. And like I said, I think it was a couple weeks ago, last time I was on the show, this whole Diamond Mine thing is really meant to just kind of build up the cruiserweight division and things like that from what I've read anyway, what I've been hearing. I'm on board with it for sure. I'm just very glad that Malcolm Bivens has evolved here, because Roderick Strong, as much as I like him and I respect him and all of that, I don't see him as like a leader of a faction. And tonight, I don't know if you guys got this or not, but I kind of felt like Malcolm Bivens was the leader of the faction, especially where Roderick Strong said that he got the call from Malcolm Bivens and then decided the Diamond Mine was for him. And you don't know, were the other guys already part of Diamond Mine? Was Diamond Mine just something that was, in Malcolm Bivens' head and brought it up to Roderick Strong first, and then they brought the other guys in? I don't know. I don't know if they left that vague intentionally or whatever. But just because of the wording on that tonight, it was like they kind of, in my mind anyway, they took that leadership role almost off the shoulders of Roderick Strong. He's probably still going to come across as like the guy in Diamond Mine, considering he's the bigger name against with Tyler Rust and Suzuki. But notice I just went last name there to avoid a screw up.
That did not get past me.
I figured as much. That's why I called it out rather than waiting for you to do it. But yeah, I don't know. That was just kind of my thought here tonight. Kelly, what did you think? We'll go to you first, since we've gone to Tom before.
I mean, you basically nailed it. The reason historically for managers is to get guys over who are not great at doing it themselves. And it's great that we've got these new different dynamics, like Paul Heyman and Roman, and Paul Heyman and Brock, where the talent can do a certain amount of it on their own. Like Brock could do some, Roman can do a lot, but that someone who can bring it home and kind of keep it in a heel context. But Malcolm Bivens is really doing some of the heavy lifting for a group where Hideki Suzuki doesn't do a lot of English period. Tyler Rust is kind of untested and unproven. They haven't done a lot with him. And Roderick, God love him, it's just dead miserable at it. His line today really was bad. Exactly the line you called out was really, really painful and really drives home why a group like this would need someone like Malcolm Bivens. And so it's too bad that we were kind of going out on a line of Roddy's, but it did remind ideally NXT brass why Malcolm Bivens is there and what he's bringing to the table and how much he should be selling Diamond Mines matches and maybe not the talents themselves.
And Tom,
this was extremely dull and didn't do anything for me. I will go a step further and say that Roddy shouldn't have said a damn word. He should just be sitting there looking like something has made him demented since the last time we saw him. And Bivens is doing all the talking, even more boisterously than he's being allowed to hear. They should just cut this guy loose. It's what we've been saying even before he was on TV. Like, why are they not doing more with him? You know, his angle on this was that Roderick Strong versus Bobby Fish is a big money match, which it's not. And he didn't really get a chance to truly sell that to us. But I believe that Malcolm Bivens could have sold that to us if Roderick Strong had kept his mouth shut and this was just Bivens talking and selling this. That would have been so much better. It's just, I continue to be week after week befuddled by what in the world they're doing with Diamond Mine, even though I'm ultimately maybe optimistic is too strong a term, but I'm ultimately okay with it because it does seem like it is long-term a Tyler Rust vehicle. It's just so weird to me that you've got Malcolm Bivens and you're not letting him do a lot, and you've got Roderick Strong in there as the front man. It's just weird.
Yeah, and I will add, too, that Bivens really needs to do some lifting here because they're going for this big, like Tom kind of joked, this big money match, Roderick Strong versus Bobby Fish. And to date, Bobby Fish still has zero singles wins on NXT TV ever. He doesn't have any. So this is where you need Malcolm Bivens to pretend that Bobby Fish is some kind of threat, because if this was a legitimate sport, you would look at the guy who's O and literally any number and say, oh, well, whatever, this is nothing.
The closest Bobby Fish has ever come to getting a singles win on NXT was when I was still doing, when they were still doing tapings and I was doing the tapings reports, and EC3 rolled him up. And then I think Undisputed Era ran in to beat up EC3. And it happened so quickly in such quick succession that I didn't catch whose shoulders were down on the roll-up. And the music played and then was cut off so quickly that I didn't notice whose music was playing. So I just went with what I thought I saw, and I didn't ask anybody around me like I should have. And I wrote that Bobby Fish won. And that was before I had editing power on my own reports. And so it's probably still up there on the torch that Bobby Fish beat EC3, even though he did not.
Ooh. Now we've got some historical inaccuracies on the torch, man.
Yeah, that and believing that Mandy Rose and Otis were actually an item. What's going on?
Yeah, right? What is that? What is that? All right, let's see. We got, I think, one more thing to talk about tonight, and that was the backstage segment with The Way. The Way with Austin Theory conspicuously absent after he walked out last week. And they were backstage talking essentially about missing Austin Theory when the when somebody knocked on the door and handed Indy Hartwell a gift. She opened it up, and it was a famous Dexter Lumis painting of The Way. And Dexter Lumis was standing in the spot that probably reserved for Austin Theory. It was certainly four people, and Dexter Lumis was one of them. And that ended up turning into Candice LeRae and Johnny Gargano essentially screaming, no, 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 that would never happen. And Indy Hartwell says, you know, everybody deserves a chance, and essentially said to Johnny Gargano, hey, you know what, why don't we put you guys in a match? And if you win, I'll never see him again. But if Lumis wins, you give him a chance. And it was made official later on in the night, lover or loser match is I think what they were calling it, scheduled for next week. We're going to see Gargano versus Lumis and maybe finally see, I don't think we're going to see the index storyline come to a close, but at least see the next chapter of it. I'm looking forward to this. The index storyline is, at first it started off as an eye roller for me, and I think maybe just because we keep seeing it every week or just about every week, it's kind of grown on me a little bit. In a way, I'm kind of almost intrigued by this. And, you know, I'm almost intrigued in a way to see Dexter Lumis win, join The Way, just to see what Candice LeRae and Johnny Gargano do and how bad they freak out about it. I kind of have a feeling that's the way they're going. It's the way that they seem like they're setting this up. But I don't think in a million years I would have thought of this. I thought that he would be joining The Way anyway. I thought we'd probably end up seeing Indy Hartwell breaking away from them and joining Lumis or something like that. But I don't know. I'm kind of I'm looking forward to this. I think this would be kind of interesting. Tom, what do you think?
As for tonight's segment, I'm just going to go ahead and pretend that none of that stuff happened. And looking ahead to next week, I guess I can't preemptively crap on it because, yes, the silver lining around The Way has been the index stuff. The silver lining around Dexter Lumis has been the index stuff. Just like you're combining two acts that I just more or less can't stand and giving me something fleetingly entertaining when they do their little, love lifts us up where we belong thing here and there. So, I mean, there's no way as absolutely rock bottom dumb as the booking of a love her or leave her match is, I'm sure that there will be a laugh or two to be had out of it and maybe in the fallout as well.
And Kelly.
Well, I can't say that I saw the scene. It must be in kind of the last part of the show. Haven't seen it. I will say that the sound of the mat, I don't think I'll be overly high on this, but yes, this has indeed been the high point of both The Way and Loomis for kind of a while, which is too bad because Candace, especially of late, deserves better because of the work she's been doing. But that's too bad. I don't know. I don't know where Loomis goes here. I'm reminded of the only time I ever liked Enzo Amore and Nia Jax was when they were teasing that the two of them were going to be together. I never liked either of them outside of that storyline. Now, Indy, I do kind of like, but I don't want to say run her away from this storyline because this has been getting her so much TV time, but I'd like to turn her loose a little more and see what her ceiling is.
Yeah, I'd be okay with something like that too. Kind of see what else she can do and kind of get away from The Way a little bit and see what her ceiling is. I'd be totally down with that myself. However, with that, I think that is bringing us to the end of our show here tonight. So filling in for Kelly, who wound up showing up anyway, I'm Nate Lindberg, and you can follow me on Twitter, Nate Lindberg. I do the NXT hits and misses, which Kelly is writing for me tonight because I did a live report for him tonight. So check that out when Kelly posts them up on the site. Kelly, who are you?
My name is Kelly Wells. I've seen about 80% of tonight's show. I wasn't going to do this because this is the second of my 4 days in a row doing a podcast for The Torch, but I couldn't help it after I saw the Dakota Kai segment. So what are you going to do? My name is Kelly Wells. You can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk or SpookyMilk.games. Perhaps some stuff coming up on The Torch for me, but I guess you'll have to see. So there you go. Hadouki Suzuki, everyone.
Hadouki Suzuki, Tom.
At Tom Staupe on Twitter. And I will be seeing one of those Kelly things tomorrow when we pre-record Saturday's episode of NXT 8 years back for PW Torch VIP, along with the next step for the first ever women's champion Paige, perhaps another wrinkle in the Sheamus versus Bray Wyatt feud ? Or maybe we're not going to get any more of it. I don't know. It's a fun time, as many question marks as it seems. I don't know. I don't remember if they advertised anything for this episode we're going to watch. Now that I'm trying to justify the fact that there is wrestling on the show. But what I'm really excited about is when we talk about movies afterward, although maybe I shouldn't be excited because that horrible, horrible man, Brian, he's going to make us talk about M. Night Shyamalan. So that is what we are going to be doing tomorrow. That is dropping on Saturday.
Oh, no. Brian, I knew it was something I was dreading.
Yeah.
Shyamalan ding dong.
Yep.
Okay, well, guys, check out the stuff on Shyamalama Ding Dong. But until next week, I'm Nate Lindberg, and we'll see you after NXT next week. Take care.